So I'm going to be talking about convective core dynamos in AP stars. Before I talk about AP stars, particularly for the geophysicist and experimentalist here, what is an A-type star? Well, an A-type star is a star that's a bit more massive than the Sun, about twice as massive, and about 10 times as luminous, and it lives to be about a billion years old on the main sequence as opposed to, say, 10 billion years for the Sun. And unlike these fine guys and gals kissing down here, A-type stars have a large radiative envelope instead of a convective envelope, but the temperatures are high enough in the cores that the cores are actually convecting, driven by the CNO cycle. So about the inner 15% of the star by radius that we're going to look at is convecting. So the P in AP stands for peculiar, and what makes an AP star a peculiar star is that there are peculiar. There's large patches of various rare earth elements and also silicon that they observe on the surfaces of these stars. So these seem to be these large chemical anomalies that rotate into and out of view as the star rotates. And most of the AP stars are actually observably magnetic. They have magnetic fields, typically a few hundred gauss, but they've observed surface fields on these stars all the way up to, I think, 20 kilogauss. These fields vary, just as the patches do, and everything seems to vary with the rotation period. So the idea is that we have these some region on the star with a strong magnetic field poking through and some anomalous abundance of one of these rare earth metals. And this guy rotates into and out of view. And so the big question is, where does this strong magnetic field that we observe in the surface of these stars come from? And so there's sort of two thoughts on it. One is that maybe it comes from a core dynamo. The problem is that your core dynamo is buried so deep down in these stars that if you're going to diffuse the magnetic fields that you produce in the dynamo to the surface, you're going to have to wait something like the lifetime of the star before you see them there. If you're going to let these fields buoyantly rise to the surface, you have to build some very strong fields. So the other idea people have is that probably this magnetic field that we see on the surface of these stars is left over from when the star formed out of its original molecular cloud. So this is the primordial magnetic field. So I'm going to be modeling one of these stars, and I'm using the Asch code, so spherical harmonics in the horizontal, Chebyshev polynomials in the radial. We're solving the full MHD equations. We're only modeling the inner 30% of the star by radius. So half of the domain by radius is a convective core, and the other half of the domain by radius is radiative. We take our stratification and luminosity from a 1D stellar model, and these are just a few parameters for anyone that's interested. Reynolds number is about 175, magnetic Reynolds number is about 900, Prandtl number of a quarter, magnetic Prandtl number of 5. For our boundary conditions, we've adopted perfect conductors at both boundaries, and at the inner boundary, we impose a radiative flux, and we also impose a radiative flux at the outer boundary, and we have an energy generation term in the core. I'll show that in a minute. This doesn't show it so well. We've actually cut out the inner 10% of the star the inner 3% of the star by radius. It's about 10% of our domain.
Why?
What? Oh, to avoid coordinate singularities, essentially. And if our horizontal resolution becomes very small if we try to keep the inner portion of the star, and the time steps become ridiculously small. So I'm building on some work that was done by Matt Browning, Sasha Brun, and Yuri Tomre, in various orders of naming. And what they've looked at already were convections within the core of these stars, and also dynamo action that this convection achieves. And sort of the key things to take away is that, first of all, convection, the convective core of these stars is actually slightly prolate in shape due to Coriolis forces acting on the convective motions trying to move along the equator, whereas the convective motions moving along the rotation axis are free to move on uninhibited. These stars are differentially rotating. They found that they had a slow inner core, and this differential rotation was diminished quite significantly when a magnetic field was added. When they added a seed magnetic field after the initial growth phase, the field saturated such that the magnetic fields were in roughly equipartition with the convective motions. So what I would like to do is say, suppose we have some primordial field that was sitting in the radiative zone. How might this interact with the convective core of one of these types of stars? But to model this, we need to have some idea of what a primordial magnetic field might actually look like. Based on stability arguments, essentially if you have a purely toroidal field in the radiative zone or a purely poloidal field, neither of these fields are stable over the lifetime of the star, and you need some sort of a mixed field topology. And Braithwaite and Sprout and Braithwaite and Nordlund have looked at this, and in a somewhat simplified definition, they've essentially got a non-rotating star. They found that if they distributed a random vector potential throughout the domain, that this field would relax into something resembling a sort of twisted, a toroidal belt with some poloidal field twisting about it. And so what I'm going to do is plunk one of these into my A-type star on top of a core dynamo that's already running and see what happens. So this is sort of an azimuthal average of the phi component of the magnetic field. And what you can see is the toroidal component of the field that I plunked in here. And this guy is about 30 kilogauss at the center versus the fluctuating fields in this star where RMS value was about 70 kilogauss. And then I added a poloidal component on top of this with field strengths of about 20 kilogauss at the center, much weaker actually at the interface of the core. So in any plots like this I show, this dashed line denotes the equator. You can see where we've cut out the inner 3% of the star, and this other dashed line denotes the approximate edge of the convective core. And this field I put in constituted a 10% increase to the magnetic energy of the system. This will be important in a second. This was not a tenfold increase in the magnetic energy, but a 10% increase. And I've also looked at some different versions of the poloidal field that I add on, but this field was simply dipolar, and this is the one I'm going to talk about for now. So what happens when I put this field in is that I get quite a lot of magnetic energy out relative to what I put in. So I've plotted the volume averaged magnetic energy density over time, along with the kinetic energy density and the energy associated with the differential rotation of the system. And I've plotted this for almost as long as I've run the entire simulation. I've run it for about 21,000 days. So what you see here are a few things. First of all, you see this is extremely busy. What you're essentially seeing are the overturning times of the convection. The convective overturning time is something like 200 days in this system. So I've evolved this for approximately 200 convective overturning times. I'm sorry, 100 convective overturning times. The rotation period for the star is 7 days. This is a four solar rotation case. But mostly what you're seeing there are the convective overturning times. The diffusion time across the core is something like 6,500 days. So this time range you see encompasses approximately 3 magnetic diffusion times across the core. But what happens is that after about 2 or 3 overturning times, the magnetic energy begins to grow until the ratio between the magnetic energy and the kinetic energy in the system is about 10. It wavers a little bit, but it usually stays between about 8 and 10. If we look at how this energy is actually distributed throughout the star, I've plotted the magnetic energy here with a solid black line, and we see that most of this energy is actually within the core. It's not in the radiative envelope. This is taken well after the system is saturated. But if I break down this energy, we see that the non-axisymmetric components of the magnetic field, which are plotted with this dotted line, actually make up the bulk of the magnetic energy. But particularly near the core radiative zone interface, which is about here, I have some very strong axisymmetric fields. And we can look at these fields. Again, I've averaged in azimuth, so the north pole, the equator, the south pole, and I've displayed B phi here, and also the modulus of the poloidal component of the field with the poloidal field lines over plod. And what I find is that I've grown these very strong toroidal structures just north and south of the equator at the edge of the convection zone and the radiative zone. And also I've got some what are kind of more intermittent toroidal structures that appear sort of near the north and south pole, near the edge of the convective core. And these structures are very intermittent in time. They vary on time scales of about 100 or 200 days. So they're comparable to the overturning time. And these are all, these are of course the M0 components. If we look at the energy spectrum at early and late times, what I see is that generally throughout the system, I've developed magnetic structures that are stronger on the larger scales, denoted in the late times here, denoted by the dashed line. But they haven't grown, or they haven't become that much stronger on the smaller scales. And so I was showing you an azimuthal average. This is actually B phi taken from an instant around when those averages are made, so that you can see these toroidal bands wrapping around the equator. And if you trace field lines through this, you can see this as well. So this purple here, this is something like 150 kilogauss, 100 kilogauss. And then the green is, green and the yellow are something like 80 kilogauss here. But what you can see is that these field lines wrap well around the convection zone. But as I said, these are very highly variable in time. So what's going on here? We're still scratching our heads a little bit over this, but what we're seeing is that if we look at where the kinetic energy lies, where the magnetic energy lies, we see some certain patterns. First of all, this is, it's a little hard to see on here, but the North Pole is about where I'm pointing there, and the equator runs right around in there. So it's tilted toward you slightly. But regions of bright yellow, white, denote high kinetic energy density and high magnetic energy density. And these regions seem to trace each other out, except the magnetic energy tends to lie in voids of kinetic energy. And both of these guys seem to be associated with regions of high magnetic helicity. Here, white is positive, and dark blue is negative. So what's going on is that we have, if we look at a 3D rendering of the magnetic energy, we actually see these helical structures. So the rotation axis is here, the north pole there, the south pole there, and the equator there. And these guys, you can see these large structures in magnetic energy, magnetic energy strongest, obviously, where this is a sort of a bright green, wrapping their way from the equator toward the poles. If we cut through the simulation, so if we cut across the equator and then sort of down the meridian, and we look at the entropy, we can see that we have large helical rolls. You see three here, essentially. And these structures extend from the equator down toward the poles. So these structures actually extend throughout most of the convective core. And if we look at some flow lines, this one's actually a bit harder to see in this projector. I've traced instantaneous flow lines at sort of a late time in the simulation. Blue are very strong, the red are weak, and the purple are intermediate. So blue here is about 15 meters per second, and red is something like 5. So these would be streamlines if this were a steady state system. But if you look at the pattern of these guys, and you look at the magnetic energy, and you overlay these two, you see that generally the two trace each other out very well. So at least on the largest scales, there appears to be a lot of alignment between the magnetic fields and the flows. Though, of course, there are some regions where this is not true. You can see maybe a bit there. And if we actually watch how this evolves in time, I'm going to show a volume rendering of what will be the equatorial plane. But the rendering I used didn't allow me to put a color table on here. So when you see regions of blue, that's something like 300 kilogauss. Regions of yellow are something like 250. And sort of the orange is about 175 kilogauss. But I have to go out of PowerPoint because PowerPoint doesn't like my MPEG for some reason. So what I have here is the magnetic energy density. And this video spans about 1,000 days, so about 5 overturning times. And what you see very clearly are these large helical rolls stretching and pulling magnetic field. You can see it pulling across the rotation axis there. If you look very carefully, you can actually see a little artifact just under this of where we've cut out the inner portion of the domain. But you can see that the fields, at least on the larger scales, are very clearly aligned with the flows. And it's very dynamic. Even though I had these great toroidal bands sweeping around the system, this is not at all sort of a constant, steady state. So this is just the equatorial plane with a thickness of about 10 degrees on either side. I have one more of these. So this is actually the full convective core. Again, this is magnetic energy. So regions of blue are the highest, and then green down to yellow and orange. And you can see these magnetic fields being sort of swept up and wrapped around intermittently as they're following the helical convection. Watch this for a moment. But it takes a moment to kind of get your bearings here because you can sort of see through the star. So this is the rotation axis is here, the equator's here, and you're actually just looking at the energy throughout the core. But you can see these great sort of twisting structures develop. So, a few remarks. This super equipartition state with these very large magnetic fields seems to depend largely on imposing a poloidal magnetic field on the system. The field I imposed had a toroidal component as well. This was motivated by what we think actual primordial magnetic fields may settle down into in these stars. But I've played around a little bit with imposing various field geometries. And it seems that the toroidal field component really has no effect. Its role seems to be largely to sit there and diffuse away. I can repeat this behavior using a dipolar field, which I use, quadrupolar and octopolar external fields. When I go to an L of 8, imposing essentially a hexadecapolar poloidal field, I don't see this behavior at all. The dynamo acts as if I haven't done anything to it. Which is interesting because these large rolls you were seeing were something like an L of 6. So this guy is just past the sort of scale of those rolls. So it may have something to do with what's the scale of the field relative to the dominant scales of convection. And I've also played around a little bit with the magnetic Prandtl number, which is fairly high. And I can still have a super equipartition state of like a factor of 2 or 3 at a magnetic Prandtl number of 1. So what does this mean? Well, ultimately, this is a very, very toy model of what may be actually going on in the cores of one of these A-type stars. And because it takes so long to get any field to the surface, you'll never know if this is right or not. But chances are good that if you do have some sort of coherent field structure there interacting with the dynamo, it's going to do something. And the diffusion times are so long that that field is not going anywhere in any time scale that matters to the dynamo. So it will do something, and you know, maybe I found one state that this type of system can exist in. Other general conclusions, just imposing a poloidal field seems to be able to kick you into a large super equipartition state. We can grow very large scale magnetic structures. Something I didn't mention was that the differential rotation that was already very weak was weakened quite substantially as these magnetic fields increased for obvious reasons. The Lorentz forces just became too strong for it to maintain a differential rotation. And we see a large degree of alignment between the flows and the magnetic fields on the largest scales. On the smallest scales, the flows and fields are actually less aligned, so V dot B is actually lower than before I put in one of these external fields.
Right, question.
Um,
I was just wondering, so you impose this, you already have some dynamo going on, and then you impose this field. Is it off axes? Because you talked about the, you know, the AP stars have off axes dipole compared to the rotation. And of course, that can lead to some strange behavior in and of itself.
No,
so
it's not
off axes.
This was on axis, yes.
Okay.
That may be something interesting to play with, though.
You seem to have kind of an identical range of scales for magnetic fields and velocity fields and structures in vorticity, and magnetic field seems to have a lot of relation. So I'm wondering how your results would be affected if you had scale separation by allowing for different Prandtl numbers, either thermal or magnetic, in the problem, because it all looks like things are slaved together in velocity and magnetic fields.
That's a good question. I can't answer that. I mean, we have no scale separation in this system. But no, that's an interesting question. Of the scale of the... No. All I've done with the magnetic Prandtl number is I've turned it slowly down to 1, and I've run that simulation for something like 4 or 5 diffusion times. So I guess that is a scale effect in itself, but it's fairly small. And like I said, the system seems to stay about the same. The magnetic fields are just weaker in general because you're more diffusive.
I was just going to say, and I think you're probably thinking along these lines, but this seems like evidence for a kind of dynamical Taylor relaxation process. Is that you find that it's consistent with that? In other words, the structure you put in, the system is relaxing, the large-scale field is part of its force-free, and it's going to the largest scales kind of available to it, which is what you see in Taylor relaxation in laboratory plasmas. It seems like that's not inconsistent with what you're seeing. Is that correct?
It could be, except, I mean, this is what we were talking about at lunch the other day. But, I mean, these fields are much more intermittent in time. So I'm not sure. It's not quite the same analogy as what we were discussing. We just had a large field in twisting. Not really anymore. I think it's reached the level it's going to stay at. So like I said, I've run this to about 21,000 days, and it's staying about the same. So I think the growth phase is over. Now, whether or not it's still building the large-scale fields is hard to say.
Yeah, it seems to me like the primordial field that you introduce is rather complicated. I mean, the field that you would expect from, say, an interstellar medium, magnetic field, you know, that collapses when the star collapses, would be very different. Maybe like a narrow shape or field.
Oh, so you're saying that the field when the star collapses should be a fairly simple field?
Yeah, much simpler than...
Well, the problem is that these simple magnetic field configurations are not stable.
I understand, but that's a sign that maybe they just the field goes away. I mean, to me, no?
Oh, no, well... It's not been answered definitively, but it has been answered, I think, to a good approximation by this. You can check it out. There's an astronomy and astrophysics article by Braithwaite and Nordlund, and then a Nature paper by Braithwaite and Sprout. And what they do is they say, what if you just have a random magnetic field? So they seed their domain with a random vector potential. And they say, what does it relax into, or does it destroy itself through instabilities? And they find, but this is all in the absence of rotation, but they find that it relaxes to this sort of twisted toroidal belt type of shape. And the location of the belt relative to the center of the star, sort of how wide or narrow the, the diameter is depends, I believe, on how they seeded the magnetic the vector potential.
Okay, if that's all, then we'll reconvene at 4:10.